Hello and welcome to Casual Yelling, the casual conversation podcast with this week, like 90% less yelling. I'm Matt Elfring. Hi, how are you out there? I'm great. Thank you for asking, nobody. So we talked about the tonal shift in the show. I say we, I mean me. Me has talked about the tonal shift of the show. Coming up in the next month or so, the show is going to be changing drastically, and drastically in a good way, because I'll be doing lots of interviews with indie game devs. After that, we're going to go into romance scamming, yada, 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 whatever, whatever, whatever. So I wanted to go back to this place in my early comedy career where I felt special. And because of January 2023, when I got laid off, I started writing a lot of jokes that, I mean, the jokes are all pretty bad. I have one about comedians making fun of marriage and they're lucky to have someone in their life that loves them. Got another bit about how IKEA is, how I hate IKEA. That's the whole thing. And then divorce. You want to get divorced if you go there. I got one about how dumb people think they're smart because they swear a lot. I got one about the time I made Carl Urban mad during a press junket. I didn't make him that mad. I didn't make him that mad. I just kind of like annoyed him, I think, with a question. Joke about the crazier you are by the number of bumper stickers on your car. None of these are good. These are not good jokes after I've reread them. One making fun of Elon Musk. Again, this is 2023, so I'm ahead of the curve. I was making fun of him before that, let's be honest. One about how I don't drink because of my horrible situation with all the medication I'm on and epilepsy. That one is depressing. Oh boy. Glad no one got to hear that. Let's see. Me supporting the LGBTQ plus community, but not knowing how what to say to people when they come out to me. That's just a real thing. It's not even really a joke. I don't know. Thank you for having the courage to come out to me. I don't know what to say. You're still the human I think you are. I think you are. You're still the human that you were before. There's a whole long bit about how I think it's weird that porn caters to an audience that wants to see 18-year-olds. Voting for the president. Oh, that's a hot button issue in 2023/2024. And then I have one thing written down. It says time theft companies are assholes. That was never established any further than that. So anyway, I wrote this bit that I think is good. I'm not going to really read the bit as much as I'm going to talk about the story of my first time of being at this place that made me feel like I had made it as a comedian. So I wrote this joke and I gave it to my friend Matt Jarofsky, and he's like, you need to really kick it off with a bit like, I'm a bald white guy, I'm doing comedy type thing. And I felt like low hanging fruit, so I didn't put that in. Sorry, Matt. Because I wanted to just kind of tell a story and not so much make nonstop jokes. So this all starts like 15 years ago. I'm going to work some of the jokes into here, I think. I don't know. We'll just tell the story. This starts 15 years ago. And my first real comedy set that wasn't an open mic was at Walter Payton's Roundhouse, which is now called Two Brothers Roundhouse in Royal Illinois. And I was the middle act. Like, I had a friend opening up and then another comedian, then me, then another comedian, then the headliner. And the headliner was this, I'm not going to mention names. Headliner was a guy that headlined a lot of like our shows, and we were all part of this comedy group. And he didn't tell jokes. He just kind of like yelled like, hey, you guys want to hear about the time my dick got caught in a zipper? And then like everybody in the audience would be like, ha 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 ha. And like the entire audience was made up of his friends and his family. Like, he was a bringer. So he got to headline everywhere. And like, he got big laughs, but it was only because his friends were in the audience. And I was always so nervous doing comedy back then. Like, I would get nauseous and I would like puke before a set sometimes. I'd be in the bathroom puking. And then he'd be like, here's Matt Elfring. And I'm like, ha 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 ha. My last name is pretty silly. I like the movie Labyrinth. David Bowie's hot. Like that was my bits. That wasn't a joke I had in this piece. That's just me just talking. I think the jokes are not that. The jokes are pretty good in here. I'm not going to say them because it's just weird. So I'm standing there to wait to go up, and it's not being like, I know I said I'm not going to use anything. Probably my friend Kat opening up prior to me. She's like kind of a writing partner I had for a while. And I'm about to go up, and I get told by the booker, Bert, who's a wonderful person for putting me up on the stage and always just ran good shows. And this kind of this guy that comes up who had a very, very skinny, like long gray hairish, like a leather jacket, like a half slumped over, probably in his 50s, early 60s. The joke I had here was, what if Indiana Jones just gave up? That's relatively funny. Here's another joke I wrote that I liked. Like he was skinny, hunched over, and a guy who could have been 60 or 28. That's pretty funny. He had an Indiana Jones jacket that usually screamed "The Hunt for Lost Treasure," but his jacket was more similar that screamed "The Hunt to Skip Alimony." And if you're probably thinking the joke would be better if I said child support, it would. But I've got a feeling like he lost his testicles as a teenager. And like, it's not a sad story though. It's like he would just tell you, look you in the eyes, and say, "Lost him on Tuesday," and like that was it. That was the vibe he gave off. Those were jokes. So it's the booker came up to me and said I was like being bumped for this guy, and he went by the name Wrench. Like it wasn't a character. It was just like he's Wrench, and like I just said hi to Wrench, and he didn't really talk back. He just kind of nodded at me. But I was getting bumped because Wrench showed up and he was a friend of the promoter and he kind of wanted some time. And like no one knew this guy but the promoter. So I was just getting bumped, whatever. And to me, it was like a weird moment because I really, really wanted to, as I started comedy out in the suburbs, I've always wanted to perform on a weekend. I've always wanted to be on the stage. And I started comedy in my 20s, late 20s, mid 20s. Like I accepted the fact that I was being bumped for this guy. I had been bumped before when I was in the city doing shows, when I lived in the city in Chicago. I'd been bumped at open mics or bumped at like the one or two small feature sets I got to do. So this guy Wrench kind of like is introduced. I don't remember who the host was. Introduced, like, you may know him from. I can't even imagine what the person who was hosting came up with. What they said, because like it was just someone no one knew. Like, here comes Wrench, put your hands together. Ah ha ha. It might have been like one of those low-hanging fruit things the host said, like, you'll find this next guy in the alley harassing you for change. You know, like that's something really, really dumb that a drunk audience would get into. Wrench walks onto the stage and he leans like onto the mic stand, like, You can hear this right now. Like that's, he's just kind of like eating the mic and leaning on the stand. And then he just does this really, really weird set. And it's kind of like, it's, I'll do my impression of it the best that I can from memory. It's,
Hey, Wrench, I just want to move to Mexico. You know, like I gotta get out of Illinois. Illinois is not my place. It is like Mexico. Like, thinking about going maybe tomorrow. You know, I just, there's a lot Mexico has to offer, and I just can't get that. And
he does that for 7 minutes, and like no one's laughing. Obviously, they're not jokes. It's just a guy who's going through existential dread about like, gotta get to Illinois. Where do you go? Mexico. Ah, okay, it's a guy who likes Mexico. I understand that. I understand from this person about five words in, he wants to move to Mexico. Obviously, he likes Mexico. He does not like Illinois. He's going to leave Illinois. When will he leave for Mexico? Maybe tomorrow. I mean, that wasn't a joke in there. It was weird. I mean, I remember seeing people get up in annoyance and leave. And I was like, oh, it's one less person that's going to laugh at my David Bowie is hot joke. And There was one person clapping before when he left the stage after doing his 7 fucking minutes. One person clapping, and I couldn't tell who it was because the promoter was back with me. So it's like, does he have like a brother? Or I couldn't figure it out. This isn't a joke that I actually wrote in there, by the way. This is just me pondering the existence of Wrench. And then it's like time for me. You know, it's like time for me to kind of hit this one small achievement I want to hit. And the host introduces me, and probably another lackluster, like, you'll love this guy because he's a white guy in a hoodie. I don't know. Like, the opening of this whole thing was about, like, white guy in a hoodie who's bald. And then, like, I come up on stage, and it's like, just, hey, my last name's Elfring. Elf-Ring. It sounds like Lord of the Rings. Shit. Like, I had a bad set, and I was, like, pissed off. But it was me being deflated because someone really bad had come up. As a comedian, I should have come on stage higher energy and said something like, what the fuck just happened? A man who wants to move to Mexico got 7 minutes of time, and I have to follow that shit. Like, how can you follow just going through cognitive dissonance and existential dread right here? You know, wanting to move to Mexico, but not realizing he can't do that. I mean, sure, he could just move there, but hating Illinois, but having no means to leave it. Like, there's no way this guy had money. And like, I had a bad set. It defeated me. It deflated me. That's something that Matt Drefke always mentioned to me. He's like, if a joke I had didn't land, I would immediately like turtle in the show. And I mean, that's what happened there. There were pictures taken at the show, which I thought was so funny because it was me in front of like the biggest American flag. And I was in a shirt that was like checkered, a checkered pattern shirt, which was big and not big on me or big in a large shirt, but like that style was very popular in just 2010 or 11. Just that year, that type of pattern was very, very popular at like Express. So I bought it. NRM. Is that a store I think I shopped at? I don't know. Like, I get off stage and like, I just wanted to have a cigarette and I wanted to like find the promoter and talk to him and find Wrench and be like, what the fuck? And It, to me, it was like a weird, weird moment in comedy. Like, I had like an eye-opening realization about myself and Wrench doing comedy and what it means to me and everyone else. Like, it wasn't that I had a bad set by being bumped by Wrench. It was because he did so poorly and I didn't know how to come back from that. I'm going to read you the actual joke part of the ending of this. And it's very, very bad. I mean, you're not supposed to say a joke is bad leading into the joke. But I didn't have a way to end this. So I'm going to read this to you, person to person, and say, this isn't a good bit. So the expectation bar has been set low for you. So if you end up laughing at this, it is going to be mind-blowing to me. I don't think you're going to. This was the end of the actual bit. So me having a bad set, like, it wasn't because of being bumped by Wrench. It was because Wrench was a ghost and cursed the audience. So if like you're ever in the bathroom here and like you step into the mirror and you're just kind of staring and like you feel the breath on your neck and someone whispering Mexico, it's a trap, and that specter in the stall is Wrench, and you should call me to punch the ghost. See, I don't like that. I just didn't have a way to end that joke. And like, I wrote all of this out. This was a mixture of mainly me telling the story with a couple of the bits peppered in, the jokes peppered in. And It's not supposed to, like, I don't know. I don't know how I approach comedy at 20 something. I'm 42, almost 43. I wouldn't know how to approach comedy because I approach podcasting in such a different way where I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head. I'm not trying to be funny. If I am funny, it's by accident. So kind of going to do a comedy set, like, I don't know how I'd approach that because you're supposed to be funny and I just can't talk. I'm not comparing myself to Bill Burr. I'm really not. But in this case scenario, I am. He can get up on stage and say things that make sense, things that are logical, things that I would agree with him on, and things I disagree, but more things I'd agree upon than anything else. But he does it with really, really good jokes through analogy, through metaphor, comparison, things like that. I don't think I know how to do that anymore. That's the issue. So I passed this piece off to Drufke and he gave me some notes, and they were good. I gave this to Jack Baker, who was on the show. Like, he kind of liked a chunk of it. And Matt wanted me to do this show in May, and I couldn't. Like, I don't know. I talked to Jack about it, and it's like, I'm opening for you, but I don't feel like my heart is in this. And it's mainly because I had a dream. I was opening up for two major comedians in the Chicago scene like 15 years ago. I had a dream about two comedians famous 15 years ago in a local comedy scene, Chicago scene. And I had a show that bombed, like really, really bombed hard. And I woke up that next morning, I'm like, okay, the reason I feel that is because I don't feel comedy is as important to me or important at all as it once was. Because all I was trying to do was gain approval from, not so much from an audience, but from peers. That's all I cared about, was like other comedians giving a shit about me. And I remember, well, like, there was a few times where, like, I felt like I hit that mark where, like, Marty DeRosa remembered my name and would talk to me at shows. But I was mainly just sitting around doing comedy with, like, Drufke, Jack Baker, Jordan Holmes. I'm just name dropping like crazy. Lewis Ryan, can never forget Lewis. And I wanted all of their approval, and I wanted them all to like me. But that was never really me. You know, that's just a mirror version of me, a phantom version of me. It's a little tiny aspect of who I am. So I really thought about that and possibly going to do this show in May. And I decided, no, like, I'm not going to do the show because it's not for me. It's for other people. That's the problem I had. So that's the joke. The joke's on the people that tried to book me. Take that. There's some bad jokes in this document, though. You can really, I would never show anybody this. I've shown a couple people. Matt Drufke and Sarah Clancy have seen this whole thing. And there's a lot of anger, confusion. There's a lot of, like, I was going through an emotional time switching medications. I wasn't on the mood stabilizers I'm on now. And there's a lot of, like, just, I'm going to die. I'm so angry at the world. I'm so angry at myself. Like, help me get out of this 100-foot deep well. And also, I really like Carl Urban, even though I disappointed him. That was a tonal shift, wasn't it? That was kind of a tonal shift. Wasn't what I was going for, but that's the tonal shift. Me talking from the heart about comedy. Anyways, that's going to be it for this week for Casual Yelling. Thank you for listening. There's going to be a few more episodes before we get into the whole interview jazz. But thank you for listening. Bye.